Hey guys, welcome back to Ponderosa Ponders. As always, it's Rockwell Peterson.
And Isaac Wilhelmy.
Joining us in the studio today
is me, Dalton Mann.
A good buddy of ours and also an armed service member. Today we're going to be talking about the riots that are sweeping across America. Let's get started. Okay, to kick things off, do you have any opening thoughts, statements? I know that you were called in and stationed for one of these events.
I mean, I was called in on standby for them because of the whole Sioux Falls deal that was going on. But nothing really happened here with the protests, so we just kind of sat around.
Fair. But yeah, I was curious to get kind of a read into, like, what do they teach you going into the riots? Like, what are the armed service members and the police taught to do in that situation?
So it's actually really interesting. So basically, at least on the guard side, what we had was called a ROE, which is a rules of engagement, and they were actually super simple. You had, and they dumbed it down for you really easy. They had three simple steps, which was shout, shove, and then shoot. And it explains exactly how it sounds. And basically, there were different levels of force that you could use, and you always wanted to get your mission accomplished on the lowest level possible, which could be a really tricky thing because you don't know how people react in this day and age. So
yeah.
Okay, so what would merit shout versus shove versus shoot?
So shout is like when someone's coming up to you and they're starting to get hostile towards you, and get all up in your face. Basically, is stand back or stop. You want to yell something that'll put your authority above theirs and kind of make them stop. And if they don't, then you get your hands up, you push them back or whatever, and you say, you just keep shouting. And then unless it gets really bad or they pull out a weapon, that's when the shoot comes into play.
Mm. Okay. Awesome. Well, that's really good to know, looking at it, because a lot of the times you don't get an idea of what you're trained to do in those situations.
No, and it's hard to tell what you're supposed to do because, I mean, yes, you're trained to act under pressure, but so much stuff is going through your head at one moment that you don't really think. Like, there have been previous accounts where, like, officers who are in riots or in shootings or whatever, they'll count the rounds that they shot out of their weapon, and they'll say 7 rounds or whatever, and the cop will be like, I only remember shooting 3. So you have so much adrenaline pumping, you don't really know what you did at what point in time.
Yeah. No, that's understandable. I mean, it's definitely a scary situation to be in, because in any one of these areas, you are pretty much completely outnumbered.
Mm. Oh, yeah, most definitely. Which actually comes a big play into, like, who the police protect during riots when there's protesters and counter-protesters, is they'll mostly always protect the counter-protesters, which is generally the Trump supporters, because they're vastly outnumbered.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. Well, it's not just the counter-protesters that are outnumbered, it's you guys. You know, it's the cops, it's the National Guard, it's the Army. You guys are pretty much outnumbered in those situations anytime you're going into it, because here in Rapid, you know, we had a small event that didn't get too hostile. We had a couple of things happen, a couple of fights break out, but
we had an intelligence officer who was down there, and he said there was about 2,000 people, and there was only one small group of, like, 5 or 6 people wanting to instigate and start stuff with shop owners.
Mm.
And we had one instance which almost escalated into a gunfight, because the shop owner was armed and he was starting to get frightened, but we got a sheriff in there really quick to get that all settled. So.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah, because I looked it up, and the police department here in Rapid, I think counting clerks and everyone else who, like, works office jobs, is a total of 160 people.
Give or take, yeah.
Yeah.
And then we also had the unit that we were with is, we were with the 235th MP unit out stationed in Rapid City. And they were all in Pier at the time, so we had a group of about 30 or so people, which actually weren't hardly even trained to deal with riots. We were actually just called in as basically standby, and we got training on what to do. They gave us a rundown that we went through many exercises for about 9 hours, which doesn't actually sound like that much in the grand scheme of it, but for two nights, it was about all we could do.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a group of, there was about 35 of us. We had 9 Humvees and then 1 LMTV, which is just basically a small semi. And then the equipment that we had, so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because I know, like, in the city of New York, there's only 8,000 cops for... How many people live there? Like 14 million?
Yeah. Millions.
It's crazy.
Yeah, for the millions of people who live there.
It's insane.
Which, it just creates a really kind of challenging situation. Because I know down in Dallas, the cops were so outnumbered by the rioters that they stopped trying to protect areas. And they just loaded all their guns with rubber bullets and started doing drive-bys to break up the protesters.
You could do that, but honestly... This whole, the police deal basically becomes one big PR campaign.
Yeah.
Because if you do tactics like that, all it looks like you're doing is just shooting random people with rubber bullets, which doesn't make you look like a good guy at all.
Mm-mm.
And so you want to use, like, what some people have been doing, like, God, I believe it was in, sorry if I'm not correct on this, I believe there was a little bit in Minneapolis. Which is where this whole thing started, where National Guard soldiers actually started, like, in a way conforming to the protests, where they would kind of protest along with them, but keep them calm.
Yeah.
So they were allowing to get their voice out there, which is what they want, without it escalating to a point of rioting.
Which I think is a good way to do it, because in my mind, anyone has the right to protest about anything under the laws of the Constitution.
Yeah.
I don't care what it is. If you stay peaceful, legally, you are allowed to protest. I don't care what it's about. You are protected under the law. And so it kind of goes peaceful protesters, police, rioters.
Yeah.
So the second you jump from protesters to rioters, then the police are in the right over you for any situation of, like, altercations or violence, in my opinion.
Well, actually, so you basically named off 3 factions there.
Yeah.
Some could consider the police to have 2 sub-factions. One, which is where the group is doing their job correctly and, you know, not actively pissing people off. Or you have the ones that are, letting the protesters and rioters get into their heads and they lose their cool. And that's when they act out in violence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, it's a situation where adrenaline's pumping and your life is in danger, and some of those cops are not as well trained as they should be, because I would be willing to bet that a lot of us here who grew up with guns, using guns, are probably a lot more comfortable around them and will probably have better discipline than some of the cops in larger cities that didn't grow up with guns and then were handed one, especially the cops that are newer on the force.
Yeah. Well, with that as well, like, we grew up around guns and respecting them, and we know what they can actually do, which is where someone who grows up in either, like, a sheltered household or a bigger city, where they never really get to shoot guns, so all they get is stuff that they see on TV or Call of Duty or whatever, where it takes more than one bullet to drop a person, which in reality is definitely the case.
No.
Even a rubber bullet, one rubber bullet can drop a person. I mean, not lethally, but, you know, drop them to the floor.
Yeah.
And it just gets to that point where they don't realize the power that they actually have.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. No, absolutely. I'm trying to approach this diplomatically. You know what I mean? Because it's like there's... I think every side in the issue has done something wrong, has made mistakes. So it's kind of hard to say that one faction is to blame above all else?
Mm. Oh, yeah. It's definitely a big gray area.
Yeah.
There's
yeah.
no more black and white. It is a lot of gray area, especially with yeah. rioting becoming more prevalent and the protesters actually, like, disowning the rioters and everything that's going on.
Yeah.
And so it's definitely becoming more of a gray area.
Mm-hmm. I really appreciate the videos that are coming out where you see, like, peaceful protests going on. Someone tries to instigate violence and the peaceful protesters shut them down.
Oh, yeah. I personally love those videos or posts or whatever I find it. Especially the ones where the cops and the protesters come together to shut them down.
Oh,
because
yeah.
then it
yeah.
gives them
yeah.
both a perspective of each other's job and they get a little bit more of respect towards each other.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
So it's
yeah.
definitely a big window into each other's
yeah.
lives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do we want to, like, go to the stem of this? Like, the beginning? With the police officer and George Floyd.
Yeah, it was just watching that video honestly kind of made me sick. Like,
yeah.
I think we are all in agreement. It seems to be pretty much simultaneously across the nation that cop was in the wrong.
Oh,
apparently,
most definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently they had worked together for a year at the same club.
George Floyd and the
and the cop,
officer?
Yep,
really?
That killed him. Yeah, apparently they worked together for a year, both working security, and apparently they didn't get along super well, according to the coworkers. Whereas the owner of the club was like, "Yeah, they worked together for a year. I don't know if they interacted with each other though." But it's like if you work together for a year in the same job, same division. You know, I think George Floyd was inside and the cop was stationed outside, but you're still going to run into each other. You know, you
yeah.
can't work for a year without knowing someone
yeah.
That you work with, especially if you're both there for a year.
Especially mm-hmm. if you're in the same division,
yeah.
like security or something. You're bound to find them.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So there are some arguments being made right now in the legal case being put against that cop that it was premeditated.
You know, I definitely... If that is, I'd have to fact check that.
Yeah.
But if, hypothetically, if that is
yeah.
the case, I could definitely see a case of personal prejudice come
yeah.
in and be like, mm-hmm. you know, I've dealt with this guy before. I don't like this guy. You know what? I'm going to get a little bit of payback.
Yeah.
yeah.
And kind of lashed out. Or in another case, if it's not true, he's definitely had complaints against him in the past, which... against, like, police brutality and stuff, and it's not the
yeah.
not the first person he's killed, either.
Yeah.
Which, they definitely should have reprimanded him for that beforehand, so that's on Minneapolis PD.
True.
Mm-hmm.
Or he was just extremely negligent, because the move that he tried to do is apprehend a person, and you want to keep them at your will at all times.
Yeah,
yeah.
Which, if that means making them uncomfortable, it's not supposed to be comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But he was kind of negligent when it came to where his knee was placed. You're supposed to place it on, like, the center upper back.
Yeah.
To where, kind of above the lungs, so they'd still be able to breathe, but not on the neck, so you're not apprehending anything.
Yeah.
I could definitely see him
yeah.
purposely putting it on his neck.
Mm.
Well, the interesting thing, according to the coroner... is that George Floyd didn't suffocate. The artery to his neck got closed off by the knee. So the main artery to his neck was closed off, and he already had, like, heart problems.
Mm-hmm.
So he was trying to get blood to his brain, and he basically died of a combination of basically, like, heart failure / a heart attack and lack of blood to the brain.
That would make sense, because, I mean, if
yeah.
you looked at the pictures, his head was to the side.
Yeah.
So you could definitely see it. Because
yeah.
When I first saw that, I'm not going to lie, I was a bit skeptical. I was like, how'd he choke to death? I mean...
Yeah. Because, like, his throat was still fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he probably did have...
Yeah.
Kind of, like, obstructed breathing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but it wasn't, like... It wouldn't have been enough to kill someone outright, but if you close off that artery and someone already has heart problems, then you start running into...
Well, that and his heart's pumping, and
yeah.
he's short of breath because of all the stuff that's going
yeah.
on, so he probably
mm-hmm.
feels like...
He can't breathe.
He
yeah.
can't breathe, like someone with asthma.
Yeah.
Mm.
But yeah, what probably killed him was the artery.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, my opinion on it, like, the whole video is sickening.
Yeah.
Oh, it's horrible
to watch.
I'm
sure
actually.
We can all agree to that. But yeah. For my opinion, is what did he kneel on his neck for, what, 8 minutes?
Eight minutes, 34 seconds.
8 minutes, 34 seconds.
Well, apparently he was on his neck for 3 minutes past when the pulse stopped.
Oh, yeah. It was confirmed that he was still on his neck 3 minutes after he died.
Yeah.
Wow. Jeez. But anyway.
Which is sickening. Awful. I mean, what is he doing for 3 minutes after the
guy was literally just laying there saying, I can't breathe. Yeah. Like, he's not fighting back.
Yeah, he wasn't resisting it. No.
No, he wasn't. And when you're doing that move, all you're trying to do is cuff him.
Yeah.
That is it.
He was already cuffed.
He was already cuffed. So what was he still doing on his neck? He was just sitting there just to be in.
How many cuffs were there? I think it was
four.
Four?
All four of them got charged with second degree. Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to remember how big those cops were, because I know that George Floyd was like 6'5", 250. Like, he was a pretty big dude.
Yeah, he was not a small guy.
Yeah, but even if he's... Because you can, like, passively resist arrest by just kind of going limp. But I feel like the four of them should be able to basically just kind of pick him up and load him in.
Yeah.
No. Like, my opinion on it, detain him, cuff him, put him in the car.
Yeah.
You don't need to do anything extra, like, kneel on his neck.
I personally don't know, but what was he originally called in for?
Counterfeit.
Yeah.
Counterfeit, $20 bill.
Yep. Counterfeit, $20 bill. But the thing is, if you look at George Floyd's rap sheet, at one point he was arrested for, I think he spent 4 or 5 years in jail. Because he and four other guys did a home invasion where George Floyd put a gun to the stomach of a pregnant woman and then forced his way inside the house, and the rest of them did like a break and entry and robbed the house, which was really interesting to find out about. But yeah, apparently some people like went through like his rap sheet and his legal records, and so he had some pretty serious charges on him previously. So.
But, I mean, he did his time, didn't he?
Yeah, he did his time.
He did his time, so he should be viewed as a normal person.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is something that our society's really got to work on. Because if you go to prison, for the rest of your life, you're seen as a convict, and there's no really chance of rehabilitation back into society. Because if you're in prison for, like, 15 years, imagine the amount of things that could happen in the world in 15 years.
Yeah.
Like, you come back into that world, you have nothing to go back to because you don't know what's going on anymore.
Mm-hmm. Well, imagine...
So there's, you might as well go back to prison because it's what you know.
Well, imagine 2005. You step out of the world and you come back in 2020.
Now that would be nuts. You're going in at the time of, what, the first iPhone and, like, MP3 players, and people are... Blink-182 is probably still relevant.
Yeah, yep, punk rock.
Yeah, and then you come out and people have VR headsets and self-driving cars and
be just a
private company landing on the moon.
Yeah, for just as a reference point for how much things can change in 15 years. And I know Floyd only spent 4 or 5, but that's where I was going with it, where it's like, someone made an argument to me that it's like the cops were responding differently towards him because he had that rap sheet, you know, and they knew he was he was perceived as a dangerous individual who had those records on him already. But if you've gone to jail, you've served your time, the idea of innocent until proven guilty still stands.
Oh, most definitely. But not saying I'm defending the cops, but kind of looking probably where their whole mindset was, is they probably knew about his previous encounters.
Yeah.
And they could say, their thought probably could have been, like, he knows what we're like, he knows what person's like, he might fight back because he doesn't want to go back.
Yeah.
So they might have been a little bit more hostile than if he had a clean rap sheet.
Yeah.
True.
But, I mean, he didn't. He didn't fight back.
He didn't fight back, which is one thing I think that they weren't expecting.
Yeah.
But they were still in the mindset of, this dude doesn't want to go back.
Like, he still might fight back.
Yeah.
Pick him up.
Yeah.
Yeah, he might start fighting at any time.
Yeah.
True. Yeah, we're going to step out quick for an ad break. We'll be back in just a second. Okay, and we're back. So, I want to jump to a slightly different aspect on this. The rioters and Antifa have been labeled domestic terrorists. And it's been proven that they've been receiving some form of help from Iraq and Iran. You know, a lot of people there are standing in solidarity with them, but also giving them advice, warnings, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I just can't help but laugh. We were talking about it during the ad break, about this talking point, and that was the word I was trying to find with solidarity. But yeah, it's definitely weird because, I mean, I listened to another podcast hosted by Robert Evans. What he is he's a combat reporter. Mm. He's on the left side, you know, and he has a podcast called Behind the Bastards, which self-promotion is actually a pretty good podcast. If you want to learn some weird stuff, listen to it.
I've heard good things.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. He's a good dude. But you can consider him part of Antifa, and him and his friends. And when you listen to them more, you kind of learn about more what Antifa is actually about, and then you learn kind of where their standpoint is, and then you see the stuff that the news is covering, and it just doesn't match up. It kind of seems like the media is playing Antifa to look like the bad guys, when really it looks a lot more like a Black Lives Matter movement, just a bit more organized. Because yeah. Originally what they're supposed, like, what their whole thing is about is, like, Unite the Right rallies in Charleston is where it kind of really took off, which is where Antifa really came out. And Unite the Right rallies was, you know, the Proud Boys
yeah.
and a bunch of other anti-Semitic groups coming together and marching, which, you know, isn't right. And Antifa was there solely to just block out their voice and not let any of their propaganda get out.
Yeah.
And then the people that are laying in the street or looting or blocking traffic, they're kind of, in the sense, the same mindset that the rioters are in with the Black Lives Matter movement today.
Yeah.
So they both have their good sides and bad sides to it, but the media is just playing it like Antifa only has a bad side.
Yeah, I think there are good sides and bad sides to just about everything. You know, because everyone's the hero in their own story. No one tries to be evil.
Oh, yeah. Both sides think God's on their side.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think Antifa started really getting a bad rap, and I started having issues with Antifa when I saw them kind of brawling in the streets in like LA and attacking people seemingly at random. Like that's what started getting to me about it. And so as some of these groups have come out and been rioting, in order to respond effectively, they've been labeled domestic terrorists. I don't know if that'll stay when the rioting stops. But
it might stay as through the current administration that we have. It'll probably stay. But if like a Democrat or maybe even Libertarian gets voted into office over the next cycle, I could see that actually going away.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, they've been burning buildings down, looting small businesses, just tearing businesses apart.
Yeah. But at the same time though, they've also been punching Nazis.
True.
I think we can all agree.
True.
It's
yeah,
good
I can get with punching Nazis.
Yeah.
Like,
punching Nazis is okay.
Yeah,
yeah.
I love videos where you just see like someone in full Nazi garb just get knocked out.
Mm. Oh yeah,
yeah.
But there's three different kinds of propaganda. There's white propaganda, gray propaganda, and black propaganda.
Yep.
So white propaganda is like, hey, join the army. Gray propaganda would be like kind of subtly hinting at the good sides of joining the army. And black propaganda would be setting up like groups. I'm just using the army as like an example because it's pretty easy to understand.
Oh, yeah. It's probably
yeah.
the best example.
Yeah. Black propaganda would be like setting up someone against the military that's actually working for the army to just look kind of like a raving lunatic or an idiot.
Mm.
So then they could easily be shot down, you know, kind of be a straw man for the organization.
Okay, so yeah, kind of like
yeah.
what politicians do every
yeah.
election cycle.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is where they just badmouth each other.
Yeah, it's like that, but you send one of your own undercover to join that group and then have them become a straw man.
Interesting.
You know, so then you discredit that organization by having someone in it that is just kind of really obnoxious and stupid and represents everything bad about whatever organization they're in, so that it's easier for you to bash them, and then your organization looks better. And so there's this theory that I've heard where a lot of this rioting is actually being caused by white supremacists doing black propaganda. And so, like, if you think about it, there's a lot of videos coming out of people in these African-American communities saying, what are you doing? Why are you burning your own communities? You know, why are you hurting your own businesses? And so there's this theory going around because they are busing people from city to city to riot.
Which is what happened in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, and what they tried to do here, which, you know, has led to the theory that it's like black propaganda where these white supremacists want to burn down and hurt these black neighborhoods.
Yeah, so it makes them look better.
So it makes them look better, yeah. What? And so they'll go in and they'll get everyone all riled up and then they'll make it a really racial issue when a lot of people going into it wouldn't have been. And then they're able to kind of go in and kind of burn these communities, you know?
Which I actually think, I guess this just highlighted that theory now. I think that actually happened back when Antifa was originally a thing.
Yeah.
Purposely gave them a bad name.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which it actually has worked in their case. But this time I think we're actually catching on to it.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, it's interesting because both Antifa and a lot of white supremacist groups have issues with the government and don't really like the government. So it's been proven that they do cooperate cooperate together and corroborate on the Pacific Northwest. So, like, in Oregon and Washington, there's been some ties and some crossovers between the two groups.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. There's definitely been reports of the far right and far left, in a way, collaborating to overthrow is a harsh word, but undermine the government.
From how I've heard it described, is they both view each other as useful idiots.
Yeah.
You know, so then they can kind of, like, share information and what they've gathered.
Like pawns.
What's going on. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're both using the other for information, which just kind of puts another layer on everything that's going on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a very interesting theory. I kind of want to touch on the topic of, like, a race war. Do you think a race war will, like, come from this?
I think there are some people who want a race war to happen, but a large majority of Americans don't want it.
Yeah, because that would be horrible.
Yeah. No, it'd be awful.
It'd be horrible, yeah.
And I feel bad for a lot of kind of racially ambiguous and kind of mixed race people. Because if there's a race war that were to break out between, you know, black and white people, you would run into the situation where if you're in between, you kind of become like the Schrodinger's cat of races, you know?
Because both sides don't love you.
Yeah, exactly. So then you're just kind of caught in the crossfire. Yeah. Where you're depending upon what you agree with and what you believe, you may be too dark to join the white side and too light to join the black side.
Yeah, and actually that's actually happened a lot. The actor and songwriter Donald Glover, also known as Childish Gambino, has actually touched on that a couple times in a few of his songs, which is actually really interesting to listen to because, you know, as a white person, it's something I've never thought about. So it's definitely a cool mindset to look into.
Mm-hmm. It's like, what would happen to them?
Yeah.
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 Which side are they going to be on?
Well, we have some friends that are pretty ethnically ambiguous, and it'd be hard, especially for other minority groups, Asians or Native Americans.
Or, Latinos.
And, who wouldn't really fall on either side. And
no,
so then
they would just deal with the consequences of both.
They would just kind of be caught in the crossfire between the two. And it also runs into a problem that if a race war were to actually break out, how many people would fight in it? You know, how many people would actually be a part of it? Where would it take place? And then if it is an actual war, you got to look at numbers, you got to look at resources, you got to look at weaponry, and it would kind of become a bloodbath very quickly. And I don't know how long it would last, but the effects of it would be just devastating.
Yeah.
Although in my mind, I definitely see, not saying I would like a race war because it would horrible.
Like I said, it would be devastating.
It'd be interesting though, because I feel like the only people that would fight in that race war would be the true racists.
Oh, yeah.
Because
yeah.
there are some that believe you can't be racist towards white people, which in the definition of racist is completely false.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then the whole saying with the Black Lives Matter is the people who are saying all lives matter, yes, they all do matter, but the black lives are what needs the help right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
They're what needs help, so they're the ones we're just...
Yeah.
Getting it out there, mm-hmm. letting it be known.
Yeah,
they're the ones.
No other live matters more.
No,
they're just the ones that need help the most.
Yeah, yeah. I've heard it compared to like a burning house.
Yes,
you know where yeah. it's like you don't really throw water on a non-burning house, saying all houses matter because yes, all
yeah,
houses
all houses
matter.
Matter
the
but
same,
that's
but
the house on
that's
fire.
The house on fire.
That's
yeah.
the one that needs help.
And mm-hmm. so, I want to put like a disclaimer. We are definitely not against the Black Lives Matter movement. By any means.
No, because
but,
I definitely see what
yeah,
it stands for.
Yeah,
and there's
yeah,
definitely
no.
a systematic racist problem going on in the U.S. or globally.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Well, in my opinion, it's a thing where it's... Looking at the racism in our society, there are some laws that, yes, impact certain socioeconomic groups
yeah.
that are comprised of certain minorities, but it's... Looking at it systematically, it's more of a class issue rather than a race issue, because I think we have societal racism, and an issue with like societal racism comes in where it's like if a single individual does it, like if this cop does it
mm-hmm.
because he's racist, say the man that killed Floyd Mayweather, you know,
George Floyd.
I am so
wow.
sorry. Yeah, I don't know. I took like the Floyd and I do. I'm sorry, I'm boxing, and I mixed two conversations.
Professional
in my head.
Podcast.
Yeah, professional. Oh, wow. I definitely apologize for that.
But yeah.
Floyd Mayweather is alive and well. At least I very much hope so. But the cop that killed George Floyd, him doing that would be a societal racism thing because he's one individual doing it.
Mm-hmm.
It would be systematic if it was in the laws of the police telling him to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I'd be happy to be corrected on this, but I have yet to find any laws that target any certain ethnicity in a systematically racist sense.
It might not
even... class-wise, it does.
Well, it might not even, like, none of, just putting this out there, none of us are cops.
Yeah, no.
But it might be in, like, a policy or something.
True.
That... doesn't outwardly say, like, be more forceful with black people, but it might just kind of twist the words in a way where you're like, okay, I could kind of see,
yeah.
kind of like in a stereotype,
yeah,
where, like, if you were to see a nun walking down a street, you wouldn't think anything twice.
No.
Where, in actuality, it could be, like, Ted Bundy hiding under that.
True.
Where, and then you could also see, and this is actually in the show that I just recently watched, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, where Sergeant Terry Jeffords, he's in his own neighborhood, and Terry Jeffords is played by Terry Crews, who is a huge man, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
And he's walking around in his own neighborhood looking for his daughter's blanket, which is as innocent as it gets.
Yeah.
Right? And he gets stopped by the police, thinking he's in the wrong neighborhood as a suspicious character.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like that stereotype.
Yeah. When I talk about those laws, I'm referring to, like, federal laws. Like, I've not seen any federal and nationally enforced laws that do that. However, there is some systematic racism in states like New York with Stop and Frisk, because
oh,
that
yeah.
has been proven to target people of color and ethnic minorities specifically.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. Mayor Bloomberg put that in there and released a statement that that is kind of what it was about, that it was meant to target these people. Because Stop and Frisk, for those of you that don't know, is... the ability to stop anyone pretty much at any time,
yeah,
without cause to look for unregistered weapons
Or drugs or any
drugs or any anything like that, which would target people of a lower socioeconomic class.
Oh yeah, and you know, even I am the son of law enforcement, and mm-hmm. I definitely hear it, and not saying that my parents are racist, but my dad he was with the highway patrol, right? And we have Pine Ridge pretty yep. close to us, and, you know, the laws between the reservation and us, they kind of clash.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And even the two law enforcements, they clash. And so when my dad was on the highway patrol, he would profile cars.
Yeah.
To try and find people who have, like, running drugs or something. Mm. Like, a common one is if you see a group of those little tree air fresheners, if you see hanging from, like, handles or a mirror, it's what they call a felony forest. They're hiding this, they're masking the smell of something they don't want you to smell.
Yeah.
Or even just, like, lower rundown cars are actually more likely to get pulled over than a brand new one.
Yeah.
Just for the simple fact of, like, they were profiled.
Yeah, the possibility.
They're more likely of doing something wrong, and they get profiled. And they just so happen to be of Native American culture.
Yeah.
Mm. Because Pine Ridge is actually the poorest place in America for sure, but I think globally.
Really?
I don't know about globally, but I do know it's one of the poorest counties in the U.S. It might be continentally.
I could see it being continentally. Because it's pretty bad out there.
Yeah, driving through that, it looks like you're going through Afghanistan.
Yeah, I've seen, you know, dead people on the side of the road that are hit by cars and just left there, going on hunting trips before.
But, yeah, that is definitely something. And then, because of that whole thing, because of the homeless population that we have here being mostly African-American, police here kind of get that in their mindset of they're the ones that are most likely to fight back versus, like, Samantha, who's running her kids to soccer practice.
Yeah. It's that stereotype.
Yeah, it's the stereotype where it then becomes the stigma of the systematic racism. Yeah. That's where it's derived from. So it might be the same in bigger cities where they don't have a Native American population, but it's the black community instead. Mm.
And we, just to clarify, we definitely condemn any sort of systematic or societal racism, any sort of systematic or societal targeting of lower socioeconomic classes in general.
Oh yeah, because it's pretty fucked up.
Yeah, yeah, no, absolutely. But it's we need to be able to criticize movements in order to have them move forwards and adapt and evolve in a healthy manner. You know, constructive criticism and, you know, unbiased evaluations. Because I was accused of being a racist for attempting to have dialogue with someone about the Black Lives Matter movement.
Mm-hmm.
Simply because I had some questions, you know, and I had some, you know, not quite criticisms, but just clarifications and, like, some things that I think would...
Like stuff you make it more
effective, yeah. And he didn't necessarily accuse me of being racist, but he said that it sounded pretty racist for me to question the movement, which I think shuts down dialogue. Well, and anytime you get to that point, it becomes unhealthy because
I don't know though, because if you don't question a movement at all, then you're gonna get stuff like Weimar Germany. They didn't question Hitler at all.
Yeah.
They probably did. They probably did.
But they were kind of locked up if they did.
Yeah, they were locked up. But as a mass society in Weimar, they were kind of powerless towards it. They didn't question it. They didn't fight back.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. Not saying that the Black Lives Matter movement is the same as Nazi in any way, shape, or form, but that's the worst case scenario of what could happen if you don't question a movement.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Well, if you guys want to reach out to us before we go to our closing thoughts, I'd like to thank you all for listening.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you guys for tuning in. It really does mean a lot.
Oh, yeah.
We want to thank Dalton for joining us in the studio. It's been a pleasure, my man.
Yep.
Yeah, it's actually was quite a lot of fun to do this.
So I'm glad.
I'd like to be on again.
Oh, sometime. We'd be happy to have you on again, man. You did great. Yeah, if you want to reach out to us, if you want to be on the podcast, if you want to ask us questions, if you want to give us topic ideas, we'd love to hear from you. You can reach out to us at Ponderosa_Ponderers on Instagram or
PonderosaPonderers@gmail.com. And I would also like to say a little statement that we are moving to weekly podcasts now.
Yep. instead of daily. So,
yep.
Sounds like every Friday we're going to start recording at around 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
And so we should have episodes up between about 6:40 and 7 o'clock every Friday. So if you guys want to tune in for the next one, definitely tune in 7 o'clock next Friday.
Yep.
But yeah, let's do some quick closing statements. Anything you guys want to wrap up or clarify before we go?
I don't think there's anything that I need to close off with, so.
Sweet.
Awesome. Yeah, we just like
a good time.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, no, we love hearing that. Yeah, it's we just kind of do the closing statements so that everyone feels heard. We don't leave anything on like a cliffhanger.
Mm. Yeah.
So, once again, thank you guys for listening, and don't forget, keep pondering.